and welcome to episode 177 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, a place where small press comics make one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mask from Mars, and joining me is the creator of the Ace webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
The dungeon keeper of comics, Tony Esmond.
I've just written dungeon in a review.
Oh.
Mostly about me masturbating in my own feces in one, but yeah.
Well, we're starting as we mean to go on this week. Yeah. Jesus. I think that's a record, Tony, for you dropping the tone.
Do you think so?
Yeah.
What, second sentence? Yeah, I might try harder, to be fair.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
And this week we're also joined by a guest who is an amazing artist we're looking forward to talking to. The work can be seen in titles like The Indifference Engine, Lightning Strike Presents, a pod fave, Cruel Sunset, which we're going to be talking about in a bit.
Yeah.
Very excitingly, he's working on the upcoming Aliens Resistance from Dark Horse Comics. Yes, it's Robert Carey. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Hey, Robert.
Yeah, Robert.
Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, I'm very excited by that. And also the fact you did that Batman cover book as well, the Batman Shadow. Very excited by that, mate.
That was a little bit of a surprise dream.
Yeah, very cool. Yeah.
I think we'll definitely be talking about bucket list comics a bit
later.
Yeah,
that's a good shout.
Because I know there's a particular title that I know Rob is a massive fan of and his dream gig. And Dan Butcher is also a huge fan of this particular franchise. I think a lot of listeners will probably already know what we're talking about. We'll get onto that in a bit. But talking of dream comics, do you know who else has
it?
It's like a dream, like... How many comics they've got there? Do you know who it is, Tony?
Is it a bit like a dream that's like a Netflix for comics? Is it that sort of dream?
It's a dream within a dream within a dream that is the Netflix for comics, and it's called Comic House.
Is Comic House any use? I've seen it pop up on Facebook things, and I've been meaning to check it out. I haven't had an opportunity just yet.
Well,
yeah, loads of stuff on there. There's loads of Dynamite books on there as well. Yeah.
Well, Rob, funny you should say that. Because Comic House is the indie comic marketplace with a difference. Plus, in brackets, they also sponsor us. So that's the reason I'm saying this.
Not what you were saying before we started recording.
Oh no, we've got
straight out the door.
We've got a guest who's going to throw me under the bus every chance. No, but there's a huge selection of titles on the Comic House database. If you self-publish and print your comics, you can list your title on there for free, so that people can order through Comic House, and it's awesome in this sort of place where we're just trying to get the books in as many hands as possible, and they only take a penny commission, which is quite cool. But the thing that a lot of people are talking about and using is the Comic House app. They have loads of digital comics on there. It's like Netflix for comics, as Tony says. And what have they currently got on there? No, you didn't make it up, although we've been using it for about 8 months. What have they got on there at the moment, guys?
They're running a Mr. Ken Reynolds special. We've got Cognition
Cherry on the Awesome Cake.
Yeah, Mr. Ken Reynolds Cherry on the Awesome Cake. So Cognition issues 3 and 4 and Slice Quarterly volume 2. And we're also they're highlighting the latest issue of 100% biodegradable, which is the Apocalypse special.
Do we have to call him Mr. Ken Reynolds now?
That's what it says on the email.
Should we make that a thing, Mr. Ken Reynolds?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
How about Lord Reynolds?
Lord Reynolds.
That sounds good.
Yeah, I like that. Lord Reynolds of Ipswich.
We were talking about that earlier.
We were, weren't we, about Ipswich? Yeah. How weird. Yeah.
Nothing
small
but praise.
That would be an outtake.
That's why I never go there.
You had to stop going there after you didn't get caught for the all those serial killers killings.
Yeah, that's true.
But I'd give out a bloody cab for that.
Oh god.
You know what isn't controversial though? Comic House. the Comic House app. You can get a 14-day free trial to find out what we talk about. We've recommended a few books on that app, and a lot of our sort of guests have got books on there, which is amazing. So find out more about the 14-day free trial and the £3 a month subscription, which is cheap as chips. That's the price of a comic that you probably pick up in your weekly pull list, read, and then think, why did I spend money on that? We've all done it, haven't we? Every week, there's always one book like that in there.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, often more than one.
Yeah.
That's because you buy about 300 books a week, Tony. Anyway.
Oh, mate, it's got worse this week. I tell you that now.
Oh,
it's got
much
worse.
Oh, yeah, I've dived back into DC again. And they're putting some great books out. But my pull list has pretty much gone up by about another third this week.
Oh, dear. Jesus. Well, you could have saved yourself a whole bunch of money.
And I could have done.
A Comic House subscription. So go to comichouse.com. Shut up, Tony. I'm trying to finish the ad. So go to comichouse.com and find out more. And as always, Pete and the Comic House guys, thanks for putting up with these.
Yeah. And can I just say that somebody messaged us saying they couldn't find it, and it's comic and then H-A-U-S, Comic yes. House. Not yeah. as in a house made of bricks.
It's more like the Bauhaus.
Yeah, exactly.
There.
Yeah. Very good. Look at you, cultured boy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I did art in college.
I did art.
I did art. If you remove N and the H and you put the H before the A.
Oh, God.
I feel we've got a guest who's just going to shout things at us throughout the episode, which is kind of like. I kind of like
that old man on this lawn shitting at the kids going by.
Yeah. Just chimping them.
Yeah. Oh, dear. Well, there's the name of this episode.
Yeah. Chimping children. What?
No. No, dude. Seriously.
Can't say that.
No. But... I'm not going to edit it out because I'm lazy, but like seriously, let's not go there.
Let's call it reverse cowgirl again.
No,
I like that
again.
One.
We never call.
Well, I keep trying to get you to call it that. But you
I
never
know.
Do.
You keep trying to do many things with me, Tony.
I'm seeing you in a couple of weeks. I'm very excited.
Yes, we'll go. Yeah, and we'll talk about that a bit later.
Yeah. How do you spell it? Is it B-A-R-T-H? Bath. There you go. I'm going there.
Anyway, we'll talk about that in the show notes. But before then, it's time to have a good old chat about comics, especially with our wonderful guest, Rob.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, we've been aware of your work for quite a bit of time, Rob.
Yeah.
But certainly, I think, let's start with Cruel Sunset.
Okay.
Because Dan recommended it, you recommended it. I can't remember what show, it was quite a little while ago.
A couple of months ago, wasn't it?
A couple of months
ago. Yeah, I
reckon.
Yeah.
We're big fans of it.
Loved it.
Yeah, absolutely loved it. I mean, it's a ridiculous calling card. That we
You're a crazy man. I'm sorry about that, Robert. But
yeah.
It's done during crazy times.
Yeah, it does kind of rip your face off with like how gorgeous it is and how good it is. And to find out there's going to be more of it, it's just amazing. But some of our listeners might not be aware of this or the fact that they can get it for free, which is amazing. So tell us a bit about Cruel Sunset and like how it actually sort of all came about and came to be.
Like, I love comics, I always have, like, no matter any job. I like, when I left secondary school and I started working all these kind of manual labor jobs, structural engineering and plastering and stuff, but I'd grown up on comics. It was a passion. I'd always loved drawing, so no matter what I was doing, I was always drawing on the side. I'd be drawing at lunchtime or in the evening. So that translated then to me going to animation college, which didn't particularly work out at the time. But anyway, skip ahead like 15 years. I'm working in a studio in Dublin on a Transformers animated show. Doing
decisions. Yeah.
And great job. Studio environment was fantastic. The people I was working with was great. The job was great and stuff like that. But it wasn't comics. Mm. So I needed an outlet for comics. And Cruel Sunset for me was that. It's a story that always been kind of one that I'd been gestating for years and would share. Like, I've had it for years, but it's, you know, it's every time I sit down to kind of do an iteration of it, it's so different than what it was before.
Mm.
But working in the studio, I'm supercharged creativity. Like, it's just buzzing off all the people who were there, like the concept artists and the other revisionists and stuff. So you do your 8 hours in the studio and you'd still need to draw. So I would come home and that's where I focus all my energy then into Cruel Sunset. And it was just a story I wanted to tell for me. It was a story I wanted to do through comics. And again, it wasn't in particular that It wasn't a story I felt I had to tell, because it's
right.
I wanted a creative outlet for a comic, and I needed it to be a comic I wanted to draw, a comic that was fun to draw, a comic that was fun to read, and that's kind of how it happened.
Nice.
Okay.
I mean, you say you're working on Transformers. Surely that must have helped sort of, because you have quite a technical style as well, don't you? There's lots of mechanical things going on and, like, you know, very clean line, especially when it deals with, like, technology. I think it's obvious that you love sort of cyber and, like, sort of futuristic sci-fi sort of tech. Is that your favourite sort of genre, that sort of?
I like dirty sci-fi, cyberpunk, kind of, like, Robocop 2, or, like the visually, I love that stuff.
Yeah.
But I alternate between that and then kind of like a dark fantasy. Have you ever read any of David Gemmell books?
No, I'm aware of them though. Yeah,
I've read a couple.
Yeah. All right. Okay.
David Gemmell's greatest writer of all time. It just, no one comes close. Honest to God. And all of his Draenei books and, oh, he's a master. But his kind of Conan the Barbarian heroic fantasy kind of stuff. So anything that's that or cyberpunk, I'm all over.
Cool.
So you nice kind one. Of veer between, like, to go from Conan to a sort of a cyberpunk sort of thing. They're almost the different sides of the coin, aren't they? I mean, when I think about comics, like, they're the sort of polar opposites, aren't they? You even have fantasy, all that sort of sci-fi.
I see a lot of similarities in like the hero is, you know, someone strong, but everything else is oppressive.
There's a loner element to them both, isn't there, I suppose? Yeah, I can definitely see that. Yeah, Conan's a loner, and
yeah.
When you pare it down, yeah, you get that, definitely. That kind of core element of, like, one character in a very specific environment, but then against everyone else, as it were.
Yeah, one against all kind of thing. And that's the kind of... I think I'm a huge fan of wrestling. Like, I love it.
You're right.
Nice. Nice.
A lot of people are, yeah.
It
can be amazing. Sometimes it can be. Mostly it's not. Yeah. But they're like, for me, like in wrestling, my favorite thing, years ago, I used to love the Survivor Series matches.
Yeah.
It would get down to 5 versus 1. You'd have this one guy versus 5, and if they're the ones that say, yeah, come on, the fuck, just super kick. You know, it's that kind of one person against insurmountable odds. It's that kind of narrative really appeals to me, and that's what I wanted to do for Cruel Sunset.
So, what was the thinking behind doing it for free? As in, essentially, if someone clicks on your Twitter profile, the pinned tweet is a Dropbox link to the entire comic.
Yeah.
Like, as I said, it was me. It was just a creative outlet. I just wanted to do it. I had a well-paying job with the studio. I didn't need money for it, so it was like, I can put it out. I don't have to pay
tax. Yeah. Someone thought a studio would have snapped that straight up. The level of quality and...
Yeah.
I haven't pushed it to anyone yet. It's just there.
Yeah, because it's almost like a sleeper. I have noticed it just sort of... It popped up and Dan talked about it, and then, like, I downloaded it, and then it was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Why is... I mean, that's kind of why this show exists anyway. Like, why is not more... Why aren't people shouting about this? As soon as you read it, like, and he's putting this out for free.
Do you think it's because it's not printed? Do you think, Rob? Do you think that's the reason?
I've been on the periphery of comics for the last maybe 10 years, a little bit more.
I've
to all the shows, and I have a lot of friends who were working and have been employed for that. And now Aliens is my first proper kind of high profile gig, if you want to call it that.
Yeah, yeah.
Comics. When I first got into comics, I was told it was all about getting your name out there, then you will be seen and they'll approach you. But that kind of is gone. It's all about you now. You kind of need to make yourself a brand.
Yeah.
And
make
yourself seen. So I had no expectations of, you know, having a flood of
people. Editors at your door, you mean? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It was done solely for the purpose of me just putting something out. If nobody saw it, I wouldn't have cared. It's just...
Isn't that the great thing about art, mate? And we all in this room do things, a lot of stuff for free. Look, for example, now, you know,
and we do
it kind of just because we love it. And I think sometimes that's the best way to get art done, isn't it? Without that pressure of money and what we're doing it for someone else. We're almost just doing it for ourselves, aren't we? You know.
Yeah.
Well, I when doing freelance, I can be quite mercenary when I need to be. If I'm told, like, well, they're spending this amount, well, then they get this amount of hours of my day, and then that's it.
Yeah. So
with this, it cost me nothing to do it. You know, I didn't make any kind of financial loss on it. My time is my own. All the effort and stuff. I was done, majority of it was done digitally, so I did not spend money on materials. And I think, like, art, I rarely do produce art for the sake of art's sake, but this for me was... It was just, it was fun. And it was nice to have an outlet that was fun and for myself. And
I think
anybody who has come back to me with, you know, feedback on how much they enjoyed it.
Mate, it's ace. Yeah, it's brilliant. It's easily Image Comics standard for me.
There's those scenes where you got the subway train and it's just absolutely jammed up with detail. But then the sort of the clarity of the figures is just fantastic. It feels very real and tangible.
Yeah, the billboard scene where she's in front of all those billboards, great.
That it wasn't a cheap, but no, like everything on that was drawn. But my original draft of them pages didn't have any of the like the stuff on the walls, any of the graffiti and stuff.
Yeah,
right.
I mean, there was very little characters in the background, and then once I got a break from it and I came back to do some additional pages after a few days off from work, I was like, that looks very bare. So, you know, I did come in and add some additional detail afterwards.
Okay. So it's a very lived-in environment in Cruel Sunset. Like, it's got, you mentioned the Robocop 1 and 2. It's where you got that kind of urban decay. I think that's actually a line out of Robocop. But it's got all that kind of the graffiti and everything's run down and, stuff like that. It's a great look, yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, well, I mean, Robocop will always be, like, a huge influence on me, like, aesthetically. I love the idea of the Detroit City and the fight against the, you know, the Delta City and shit. Mm. I love that kind of contradiction.
Yeah. I think the
nature of Detroit has almost become what is shown in the movie. It's surreal. People don't realize. It's
terrifying, isn't it?
Yeah. Really is.
I mean, the film was so kind of ahead of its time, and it's unfortunate a lot of it has come to pass, like with the kind of Detroit in such a shitty state and corporations wielding such power as they do now.
And I think even now the police force can't afford to run itself in Detroit. Nah. I think it's another one of those, isn't it? Like, there's no, you know, they can't afford to have overtime, or, you know, the cops are sort of just doing it in for free almost, some of these big cops, you know. Yeah, it's really interesting.
Yeah.
I knew it wasn't going to be long before we started talking about
the Robocop.
Who are you sort of artistically influenced by? You've been reading comics since you were a kid, presumably, Rob, then, yeah?
My first major influence was Brian Hitch.
Okay, right, I get you. Yeah.
Funny enough, like, the first book I remember buying was an Aliens book. Well, I think it was, like, DHP Presents.
Oh, okay,
The first part of Labyrinth by Killian Plunkett, and I can't remember who else. But I remember the art was amazing, and the aliens, it was just the business.
Mm.
But the first book that was, it was transcendent. I was just like, holy shit, comics can be this amazing, was the first run on the Ultimates.
Okay. Yeah.
For me, I still consider that the best looking comic book of all time. Like, I think, like, that just, the colors are incredible, the layouts, the detail, the story, it's still probably my favorite.
Yeah, really. Certainly the first volume is when they focused everything on it, isn't it? I think it sort of
It harnessed something as well at the times, didn't it? You know, that was, and we've seen it a lot of times since, but at the time you kind of, apart from if you're talking The Authority, which is almost, it's almost a sequel to The Authority when you look at it.
For me,
until
The Ultimates, The Authority was my favorite.
Before
The Authority, then it would have been Stormwatch.
Are you reading his Hawkman at the moment?
No.
Is really good? Really amazing. Yeah, he's really back on form for me, you know.
I don't tend to get much chance to read comics. I'm one of those that I wait for the trade. And mostly just out of necessity because I just don't have the time.
Yeah,
I get you. Yeah.
Sure, yeah,
it's worth it. I think there might even be a sale on this week, I think, on Comixology, if you look for it. But,
oh, the sale's been crazy.
They've been mental, haven't they, this week? But the last issue has got him and the Atom sort of fighting giant creatures, and you know, really impressive. Real back to that sort of big, broad canvas that he used in the Ultimates and Stormwatch and stuff like that. Really impressive. Yeah, really liked it.
There's no one does cinematic storytelling like him in comics.
They don't, do they? No. Yeah, that is true. Yeah, he's really good. Yeah.
Interesting.
I think another, for me, another sort of example, there, Brian Hitch in the Ultimates really stood out to me. But also, I think Steve McNiven's work on Civil War and Old Man Logan.
Yeah.
The cinematic telling, like storytelling and that. I'm not such a fan of Steve McNiven's more recent stuff. I think it's just the lines a little bit too scratchy for me. But certainly Old Man Logan is just...
Old Man Logan is phenomenal.
It's just fantastic.
Civil War is fantastic too. Old Man Logan his work looks like when he was just given the freedom to do kind of his book done time sort of thing. Whereas maybe deadlines are maybe a factor in
Civil War's got that widescreen quality, but it's got really good personal moments as well, which I really liked about it.
I enjoyed the story.
Yeah.
And is it David Marquez?
Marquez.
Yeah, his stuff is exceptional.
Yeah, really good. Well, you got to be a fan of Neil Adams as well, then. Have you, Rob, or?
I think he's a fantastic artist.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, on a personal level, we're not going to talk about the flat earth theory.
But again, I'm very snobbish when it comes to art.
Right, and good. Best way to be.
Yeah. Yeah. But my appreciation of comic art really started with Brian Hitch and the Ultimates. So for me, that's my base level. And I go from there. Like, there are older story stuff. I'm very slowly catching up on some of the older X-Men stories and stuff.
Yeah. But,
like, I mean, obviously, I was a fan of some of Jim Lee's stuff on Uncanny X-Men and stuff. But
mean, for me, there's a straight line from Neil Adams to Jim Lee. I think if you look at some of Neil Adams' Avengers stuff, and especially his Batman stuff, You can see there's a real quality to the sort of 3D image. He almost reaches into the reader, doesn't he, with it?
Would you say like the Hitch on the Ultimates was maybe the first kind of introduction of that kind of film widescreen comic artwork? You know, when stuff stopped from that traditional kind of comic book stuff to more a cinematic.
Yeah, and the pacing changed.
Sort of pulled it out of it.
I don't know if there's a correlation, but I mean, when TVs went, when was it 4:3 to 16:9?
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
Maybe I don't
know. Sometimes it used to. I did feel like the storytelling slowed down a bit, and they'd be a bit more considered about tone and just the pace of the storytelling. Whereas older comics, you could just got so much stuff is happening in from one to the next. There's hardly moments of taking a breath as
they
it
tell
were.
A four page issue. No, four-issue story in like one issue, don't they? With a lot of, especially certainly the Bronze Age stuff.
Yeah, Bronze Age, completely. I do think we've gone a little bit the other way on it. I read a Batman book this week, and it like fuck me, nothing happened in it. And I'm, do you know what I mean? It's like decompression. I think has gone a little bit far in some cases.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, I think it's when we paced it right. I think with the Ultimates, bear in mind they were writing for the trade at that point, weren't they? Really, you know what I mean? That was the big thing at the time, and I think that really paces well. And that fits a lot of story in the first issue. You know, you got the bit with the Hulk, you know, climbing the building and all this sort of thing, you know. Yeah, I remember reading it.
It's not perfect, but I thought it was just all the elements combined, I thought, made it an amazing book. Now, Grand Theft America is like the third volume that Miller and Hitch worked on. And then I think after that was Ultimates 3. Not a fan
the
of
the Jeff Loeb one.
No.
I'm not a fan of that one.
I read the first issue of that and I was like, it's done. Don't need to see it in this.
It was so different as well. It's, you know.
As an actual story, it's good. The art is good. But as a continuation of the Ultimates, it's not. The visual narrative of the Ultimates was as important as any other factor. And then you've Joe Madd coming in, who, again, one of my favorite artists.
Yeah.
But he goes in and starts drawing fucking Hawkeye in his comics ordinary gear. And I was like, yeah, if, you know, Hawkeye started walking down the street in that gear, and you're like, you'd be like,
I remember Thor was talking completely different to how he talked in like the first two volumes, and I was like, this is a different Thor, isn't it? You know, it was just really random.
I think it's definitely seen as a misstep in that series, isn't it?
There's that scene where they're sitting in the living room watching a bootleg version of Tony Stark having sex with Natasha Romanoff, and I'm like, why is this in here? Like, what group of friends sits around and discuss it on a massive...
Well, I mean, yeah, I don't know.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. I'm not knocking it, but...
Vince, yeah, I've got that disc of Dan. I'll bring it over when I'm around.
You need a big screen to appreciate that. I just kind of like, from that moment on, I was kind of like, what the fuck? It didn't seem like the same thing at all. Like I said, Joe Mad's art, I think he was pencil scans, which generally I don't really have a problem with that, but...
He needs proper contrast between the black and white.
His artwork is very kind of like he's done it now, even the video game stuff, but it's very kind of clean cut and shaded and stuff, and it doesn't work so much when it's muddy like that.
When he does his concept work, like some of his concept stuff on like Battle Chasers, when it's all kind of pencil tonal stuff, looks amazing. But again, in contrast to what had previously been set as the standard for the Ultimate, it was too jarring. And you know, if you take the reader out for any second, you're kind of messing with
you're losing.
It's like like when you follow a band and you love them, and then sometimes when the guitarist leaves and they get a new guitarist, you don't notice it, but the lead singer changes, and when you hear the new album,
all time's lost profits.
Oh, Lord. Fuck me, they've come up quite a few times on the show. The Lost Prophets. Never in a good way. But no.
It's like when the Sugar Babes changed their lineup.
That ruined it for you, didn't it, Tony?
Yeah, it really did.
I always remember that band Drowning Pool. Was it Drowning Pool? And like the lead singer died in his sleep, and they got a new guy, and then they were about to go big, and then it just was the end of it.
Fizzled, Oh dear. But back to artwork. Speaking of black and white artwork and the contrast between line art and stuff, are you a fan of Sean Gordon Murphy? Because I can see that.
Yes. Sean Gordon Murphy is like of now, of any contemporary artist, like he is, he's by miles my favorite.
Yeah.
My biggest influence. And I just adore his line work.
When I say I can see that in your work, not in normally when you say that about like an artist, you can see like the way they draw figures or this, that, the other. But it's more how kinetic your work is, or the movement, or the speed lines and the way movement
it was. I've spent hours looking at his pages and trying to deconstruct them, trying to figure out how he approaches them, and trying to get into the mindset. And I'm not saying that it's worked or anything, but I love how he lays out a page. I love his ability to have a nice balance between the amount of black or the amount of white on a page. Like the contrast is on his page, just as a graphic image, is phenomenal.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of aesthetic I go for. And, it's more than blatantly obvious.
Because it goes beyond just sort of panel layouts, doesn't it? It goes there's the page design and the way
there's a quality of line he has as well. Do you know what I mean? There is. You can tell the sort of the noodled line that he's got.
Because some artists, they get a looser line, or that you see ink spatters. And sometimes the looser they get, the worse they get for me, because it feels like it means rush. But no matter how loose Sean Gordon Murphy gets, everything's still pretty crisp.
It's like it lies to you, because it looks incredibly detailed, but then sometimes you zoom in and it's just a blob of black and a couple of lines. Like, how is he doing that? It's like witchcraft.
Yeah, Sinkovich does that for me as well.
Yeah.
Occasionally you look at you close up and you think, oh, it's almost just the shape, but it transmits such, it communicates to you just from that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Definitely. I was going to say...
Matteo Scalero as well.
Sorry, mate?
Matteo Scalero.
Yes. Yeah, he's on my list for you as well, my friend. Yeah.
More and more now, he's using the more like ink wash and stuff. It's just his stuff is gorgeous. That's he inspires me too.
I'll tell you, I saw a little bit of in the same wheelhouse as you is the artist Bengal, who's doing that Death or Glory book at the moment.
That book looks savage. I cannot wait to get hands on it.
Oh, it's really good, man.
Such a good book. I mean, mental. Absolutely crazy. but
that's got that speed about it as well. You know, it's got that sort of motion to it that I see in your work as well, dude. Definitely.
I think it should translate, but I am an incredibly fast artist.
Okay.
My style or whatever, even skill, I've developed it to be, because for me, wanted to get into comics and approaching it practically, it was all about being able to produce a page a day.
Yeah.
That was everything I geared towards, and it's all about developing as many shortcuts and as many ways of, you know, getting your page finished fast that you can hit and maintain deadlines. So,
So what's your method then for your pages?
Rough layout, get it approved, and then ink.
So you're are you pen and paper? Are you?
No, I'm digital.
100%. Right. Okay. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Digital because I need to get this Cintiq to pay for itself somehow.
Yeah. It's that guilt of it just staring at you, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah. How do you feel?
Yeah. It has to justify itself somehow. Digital again because again it's all about speed.
Yeah.
With digital layouts, like if something is shite and it's wrong, I just control Z. That's it. I don't know.
What programs and like processes do you use then? Because we quite a few people on this show have sort of said I use digital, but I don't think too many people have talked about like the programs or like processes or any tips and stuff.
I use Manga Studio or Clip Studio, or whatever it's called now. Yeah, Clip Studio Paint. And it was Manga Studio 5.
Yeah.
And that's I'll do my layouts and I'll do my finish. I draw digitally the same way I would traditionally.
Right.
I mean, that sounds stupid, but my approach to how when I'm drawing is the same. It's about working out perspective grids and...
Yeah.
Okay. So it's all on the same page, essentially, in a kind of digital way. You don't sort of draw a panel and then insert it onto a page or anything like that, or...
No, it's all done on one page. Now, like, there's benefits to digital that I embrace. Like, I mean, if a panel isn't working and I need to do a revision shot, I'll just, you know, digital camera, stupid headshot, how are you? Insert that in, use that as reference, and boom, done.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, nice no, one. Just digital inks. On occasion, I'll use a digital brush and I'll customize a few brushes and try to make it look as organic as possible.
Yeah. Mm. Do you ever keep an eye out for like, I always see like artists sort of saying, oh, I've just released this set of brushes. I've created this set of brushes. Do you ever keep your eyes open for things like that? Like new brushes and inks and all that?
I used to, but I don't anymore because there's some dude who does a load of amazing brushes.
Kyle,
that's the guy for Photoshop.
Yeah,
right. Okay.
Oh, for
fella who did it. He did a monster pack for Manga Studio, and I use quite a lot of them.
Yeah. I've been told that's the one. If you're kind of doing inks, like just black and white work, is it Clip Art Studio or Clip Studio?
It used to be Manga Studio, and now it's Clip Studio Paint.
Oh, okay, right. That's the one to go for because it's fantastic. And I think they had a bloody sale on Black Friday. They were selling it for really cheap, but it's one of those programs. If you keep your eyes out for it, it often pops up for like they're doing a half price for a weekend.
You can get it for probably for about £20.
Yeah, it's not much at all.
Like even that's the pro version, you might get it for £40. Like it's amazing. It knocks the shit out of Photoshop.
Yeah, I mean, people will think, oh yeah, you know, I've obviously got to use Photoshop to draw comics. You don't. I mean, pretty much every artist that I've spoken to, it's either something like, you know, Clip Studio or it's Procreate or it's
yeah, I mean, some of the stuff people are doing on their iPads with these new pencils.
That's the hotness at the moment, isn't it? Yeah. Everyone's talking about that.
Yeah.
You not fancy doing that? Well, is that going to be the next investment, you think, Rob?
No, for me, it'll be a Switch or something.
I just go straight to hookers and blow, mate. That's
just, you get, but I'm bored of that. Well, I mean, I thought that was employed with comics, you know?
Yeah. I was going to say, you come from the lucrative business of plastering, sir, to comics, so you probably had to cut down a bit, yeah.
Why do you think they call it plastering? It's nothing about the actual work. I know, I've used the pencil stuff on the iPad, and of course I'm skeptical, but then you use it, it's like, holy shit, this is amazing.
Yeah.
Again, just being practical, I've no need for it. So, like, I'm at my desk and I'm at the Cintiq maybe 10 hours a day. But when I'm done, I'm done. I'm going to go play some Red Dead or Hitman.
Yeah. Right, okay. So you don't have to sit on the bus drawing unless it's a really tight deadline, do you?
Well, or sat on the couch, like I work from home. Because when I was in the studio working on Transformers, I had been offered a couple of comic book jobs, and I was tempted, but I was enjoying the work and stuff. But again, it was like 3 hours travel a day to the studio and back. And then once the offer for Aliens came in, I was like, "You mean I get paid to work from home and on Aliens? How much do I have to pay you? Is that? Oh, well, you pay me? Oh, okay."
I mean, now you bring that up, that's you're doing that with Brian Wood, aren't you? Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a great writer, mate. I really love it. I mean, Northlanders is just an amazing series, isn't it?
Yes, it's incredible. I love it.
Yeah. How did that come about? How did that little thing happen to you?
I don't know. I don't know. Because, I loved Defiance. One of my favourite Aliens books. Tristan's run, Tristan's art is insane.
Yeah,
he's great, isn't he? Really nice guy as well. Yeah.
Well, I know his art is amazing, but now I'm starting to hate him because now I'm seeing these snippets of process where he's doing some of the covers.
Right.
I'm like, dude, stop. Well, first of all, you're making me feel bad. Second of all, you're just going to disappoint people who buy the book when they look inside because his art is incredible. I mean, how do you live up to that? You don't. So you just mutter bad words and feel bad about yourself.
Oh, I don't think you've got anything to worry about, mate. I mean, you on an Aliens book, Jesus, sign me up. I mean, I don't normally read sort of franchise or sort of tie-in sort of titles. But, you know, Brian Wood and your art, it's just a winner.
Yeah.
Honest to God, the script is drawn itself. It's really good. Like, genuinely, I have to say that as a, you know, but on my soul, I love it. It's phenomenal.
Yeah.
I'm getting to draw stuff I never thought I'd get paid to draw. Even about a year ago, I had reread some of the points and I'd hit up Tristan on Twitter just saying how much I love this art on it. And this is even before Resistance was a thing, so I'm not being a lick arse or anything. Genuinely, I was a huge fan of the series, and then being given the opportunity to draw was like mind melt.
Yeah.
And another great series is Dead Orbit as well, if you've read that, by James Stokoe.
Oh,
that's pretty. Yeah, it looks very interesting.
Stokoe's work is, that's a brain melter, isn't it?
I double dipped on that. I got it on the digital as well because it's
so
good.
I wish he had actually done that Spider-Nam, or they had given him the. Do you remember those pages he did of Spider-Nam?
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. It was just a bit of fun for himself, wasn't it, to do Spider-Man in Vietnam? And it was just gorgeous stuff.
I will be reading Dead Orbit. Because over the last couple of months, Comixology has had the Aliens stuff on sale.
Okay.
So I'm slowly making my way through all of the Alien omnibuses and I've gone through all the AVP stuff and the AVP Dread. And
yes, I think there's a big Dark Horse sale that's got all of them on sale. You know, the omnibuses they do. I think they're all on sale at the moment, I think.
They tend to have it, because I picked them up in batches over the last couple of months. So they have a Dark Horse sale quite regularly.
Yeah. Yeah, they do. The Cream Bechko Aliens Vampirella is actually quite good as well. It's actually quite fun. Yeah, yeah. I read the first, which is also on Comic House.
Well, I have to check that.
Look at that. Yeah.
I mean, when it comes to like drawing the Xenomorph, shall we say, was it something that you had already drawn a few times because you just love it, or was
it can't
one
be
of...
easy? Yeah. Doesn't look an easy thing to draw, does it? Yeah.
I spent like I can get a page done in maybe three and a half hours, like on a good day if it's a simple enough page. But yesterday I was drawing an alien and it took me 4.5 hours for an alien on one panel.
Right.
So they are bastards to draw. But their design is like, for me, like again, go back to Robocop. Like with Robocop, their design is. It's classic.
Yeah.
Like, it's up there for me. It's that TIE fighter, pulse rifle, Robocop.
Yeah. I mean, depending on the film, though, the sort of design changes a little bit, doesn't it? So what aliens are yours, as it were? Is it like, are we talking the James Cameron style of alien, or is it the first Ridley Scott kind of thing?
I think my two favourite designs are either the ones from AVP... Because I love the clean dome.
Yeah.
Okay. Right.
And I love the aliens from Resurrection. I like that brownish hue to them. And
yeah. I love the look of that film, and I love the actors in that film, but the film itself just sort of...
It's not great.
Yeah.
It has its moments.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do love it. It's a lot.
Yeah. Wasted Michael Wincott. I love that actor, and he just he's really cool in it. He just goes out like an absolute.
How does he die again?
He searches.
He's the captain, isn't he?
Yeah, he falls down a hole, and then like the alien kills him while he's stuck in a hole.
Was it that dude, Christy? The guy with the dual pistols? Like the alien just spits on him, and then he falls.
Yeah, yeah.
He's such a badass character.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I would have loved a sequel to Resurrection.
Right.
Yeah, it felt like it was going to go that way. It did all right as well, didn't it? It's, the Alien franchise in terms of like 20th Century Fox is such a mess. You know, when it gets up to production and who's doing it, I mean, God knows what's happening there, because you hear like Alien 3 was an absolute cluster. And you would have thought with a franchise like that, it wouldn't be hard to get on the same page and want to do something amazing. But... you know,
When
everything is designed by committee, it's always going to get messy.
Yeah.
I didn't mind that. What's the aliens? Was it Requiem when they're running Aliens, Predator, Requiem? There's bits that I didn't mind seeing because there's the aliens and predators duking it up, but the most of it was just like any time the humans were involved, it was fucking garbage.
It was dark.
Yeah.
It was dark. It obscured a lot of detail and stuff.
I thought that's as close as we're going to get to sort of like aliens on Earth running rampant. Because what's that comic arc when they're actually on Earth and Earth is fucked because they're all over it? And
There was a lot of after, like, no, not Stronghold. That was after, like, the Song of Spears and stuff.
Right.
They were set on Earth after and all that Xenozip stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, it does seem like Dark Horse have got a hold of the alien thing now, haven't they? They're sort of... Yeah. They've righted the ship for me, to be fair.
Yeah.
Yeah, they really have. Yeah.
Yeah.
And what just comes out, like... I'm not going to say any one franchise has got a bad... Like, I'll judge it individually by a title. And...
Yeah.
So far, like, the most recent Aliens books have tended to be quite good.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have been,
I find that the Aliens books work more for me than the Predator books do.
Yeah.
The Predator books for me will either be really good and totally get the tone and everything, or they'd sort of lose me, or it's just doesn't work in comics.
I was always a bit confused by Dread Predator Alien or Superman Predator Alien or whatever it bloody was, Batman. You know, that kind of turned me off a little bit, I have to say. I just want a solid alien book, really. That's kind of where I want to go with it.
Story wise, like you said,
the Dread Predator Aliens books I thought were quite fun. The second one, where it's the infestation underneath the Hall of Justice.
Right. Okay. Was that Clint Langley? I can't remember who did that now. I'm trying to remember who did it. It wasn't Clint Langley.
RoboCop and Predator are very tricky in as much as their first outing kind of covered so much about the characters. It was like the definitive take on them. And what else can you kind of do? Yeah. I mean, I think Predator more so than RoboCop. That it seems very hard to kind of... What else do you do with a Predator apart from him hunting someone else somewhere else?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's a tricky one. And the Predator did so well in dealing with that.
I've not seen that film.
Yeah. I've not seen that film.
Seen that film, but I haven't heard much.
No. Yeah. I was told not to waste bus fare in.
Yeah. Like with RoboCop, obviously, he kind of like struggles with his humanity and his identity, and by the end of the film, he's kind of pretty much regained that. And then on the second film, they have to kind of pick that up, and they sort of dial it back a bit till where he's still a bit robotic, and he's kind of lost his humanity.
Fight a giant robot, and it's fucking awesome.
Yeah,
yeah, it's awesome. Yeah,
Frank Miller does some actually all right acting.
Yeah. It's actually called Frank, isn't it?
Tries to get his name taken off RoboCop 2, yet he's proud of RoboCop 3.
Fucking hell.
Yeah.
Now, I'm in a very small minority that thinks RoboCop 2 is better than RoboCop 1, but...
Ooh. That's small.
Yeah.
An army of one.
Yeah.
I think RoboCop 3 was basically punched out for the Asian market.
It was because didn't he fly in the third one? Is that what happens? I can't remember now.
His jetpack looks the design for his jetpack is phenomenal.
Yeah,
looks great in the jetpack, but then they gave him this stupid fucking arm cannon that makes him look like a hipster robot. It looks like a big cafetiere that he's just passing out jars at everybody.
Just didn't really understand what they were doing because was it you, Vince? You got me the RoboCop trade from Boom.
Yes. Yeah,
and that's essentially that. I think that's Frank Miller's original take, where it's basically one and three in one story.
Who drew that? Was it Frank and a combination of other people? Was it?
It was that Rip.
Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah,
she's just like, holy fuck, dude! I don't know how long he spends on his artwork.
He's a bit like Jeff Darrow, isn't he?
Did Black Summer?
Yeah, that's him. Yeah, I actually quite like his sort of avatar, sort of dirty, violent sort of approach to stuff. Yeah, but I mean, you got to love Simonson as well, haven't you, Rob? You got to love his approach because he's done RoboCop and he's done Alien, and you know, he's a master, is he not?
But again, like Walt Simonson is, you know, I mean, I appreciate the standard of his work. Like, it's good. Like, well, it's more than good. It's phenomenal. But it's kind of before my time.
I get you. Okay.
Yeah. I haven't read much of what he's kind of illustrated.
Yeah. Same with Rip, as in with your artwork, Rob. Not to take anything away, but like if you handed that to a flatter, they'd be like, you C-word.
I've been given out to before by colours. As I said, like when I draw, and I draw as like traditional as possible, like I do almost everything on a single layer.
Yeah,
and right.
I've been given out to because I'll even like even tonal stuff and stuff. Like once it's done, it's all flattened. It's like, dude, give it to me layers, prick.
It's like, the detail in it is just so much. It's like, oh my god, that's there's a lot of heavy lifting.
Yeah, I've got an image of him being like a crazy person in the studio. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, there's that element. Who's colouring you on Aliens, Rob?
Dan Jackson?
Right. Okay, cool. How many issues you got in the bag? Have you got a couple already done? Or?
I am not sure I can say. The only reason I even say that with any kind of hesitation is because I've never been on a book like this, so I've no idea what the
fair enough, play it safe.
Yeah.
So I think turnaround-wise, doing, you said about 3 or 4 hours per page. That's incredibly good because, as far as I can tell, most pros take about a day on a page. Is that right?
Well, I was always brought up saying the industry standard is page a day. But on a monthly series, it seems like you've about 5 to 6 weeks per issue.
Yeah.
Okay.
page counts are steadily going down, which is great.
What are you about? Was it about Dark Horse? About 20 pages, 22 pages, is it? Or
about that.
Yeah.
And also, it's a kind of job and finish, isn't it? So once you've done your 20 pages, if it takes you 3 weeks or 4 weeks, you still get the same money at the end of it.
Mm. So, well, yeah, I mean, that's why commissions are amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Overwork.
So you got to kind of find that balancing point between the quality of the art and the amount of time taken to punch it out. So, like, for instance, if someone said to you, right, we want to pay you to do Cruel Summer, like issue two, would you dial down the amount of detail you were putting into pages? Because when you said before you was doing it as like a personal thing, you could kind of go crazy with it.
Well, there's a certain standard of quality I'd set for it. I would maintain it. And then, like, if I'm doing 4-hour days or 14-hour days, I would take that on me to produce that standard. It depends on the page. Like, some pages do take only a couple of hours. Like, if it's talking heads page, you know, I don't need to be ridiculous and add in, you know, a cityscape. But once, if a shot calls for it, I'm happy to put the effort in.
So I presume, like, Aliens comics, it's going to be a lot of, this is a massive generalization, lots of kind of dark panels with
you see in your head has been heavy inks, don't you? You definitely do, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't say traditionally an alien story is very open and set summer meadows.
It doesn't happen in daytime in Times Square, doesn't it? Normal case, it could do, but in normal cases,
I mean, alien stories can be. It depends on what the quality of the writer, you know.
Yeah,
we're not trying to drag out you what it's about, dude.
No.
Tell you.
But, no, I know. Yeah, it happened to be very, very careful with what I can and can't say.
So where is it set? Yeah.
Well, so if someone came and said, "Right, you're gonna do a comic for me. It's gonna be set in the middle of a forest where two armies wearing ornate armor are gonna be clashing." You'd be like, fucking hell.
That's fine. When you talk about being fast, it's all about developing time savers and being able to fudge detail and stuff. Like, a forest is very easy to do minimally, but also look.
Okay. Yeah, especially if it's coloured. Yeah.
So, but when it comes
to outline, there's your entire forest.
So, when you're working on like a sort of monthly sort of book, as it were, I know like the page will vary like 2 or 3 hours to 4 or 5 hours or whatever. But do you do anything like set yourself organizational spreadsheets or write lists of things that you have to cover in the day?
No, I am quite proficient in how I tackle my work.
Yeah.
I might not look that way, but...
Do you think the animation job also helped you get into that sort of rhythm of working like that?
Well, I think I was quite anal before about, like, if I have 5 pages to get done, then 5 pages get done.
Yeah.
And I'm like, or if I have 2 weeks to do it, doesn't matter. Then 5 pages are done in 5 days or less. It's all about getting the work done first, and then afterwards you sit in your arse and you've got a week and a half free then. So when I have whatever my list of things to do, like, I mean, my spreadsheet is very basic. It's just, right, do designs, do layouts, do pencils, then inks, and submit each for approval or whatever. And, yeah, it's not rocket science.
How much do you run each page by Brian, or is it just editorial, or how does that work when you work for someone like Dark Horse? Do you go straight to the writer, or do you go to, you know, what's the sort of pathway?
Well, it's submitted. Well, once whatever I have for approval is sent into editorial and Brian, and everyone has their say on it. So far, any changes that I've been required to do, I mean, I've been able to do, like, actually, yeah, they're 100% right. And anything I've had to do has always been for the betterment of it. So, and it's the first time I've had to work on a comic with editorial of this kind of, I wouldn't say rigidity, but I've worked on a Power Ranger stuff before. I've worked on Phantom. Even I've worked on Super Crooks on the Mark Miller thing.
Yes. Yeah.
And editorial tends to be just, okay, so with this, okay, that's grand. But this is, not to be condescending to other ones, but it's very professional.
I suppose you're working on an IP as well, aren't you? They need to run it past certain people, do they, presumably?
Yeah,
so you can't go quite off model or as much as you'd like to, possibly, in some things, you know.
Well, I mean, I haven't found any resistance.
Right, okay.
But,
nice.
No, like... yeah. Once I do the script and... Once I go through the script, and then I'll highlight myself what I think needs to be designed or redesigned or whatever for the thing, and I'll do it and send it in. And I have to say, that part of the process I adore. It's been great. I'm getting to mess around with some stuff and stuff that's iconic and stuff, and being able to add a little twist on stuff. And
Alien fans. There's loads of Alien fans listening to this going, oh, redesign. I wonder what you could be talking about there. Who would that be?
No, you know, I'm talking, it could be like, that kind of...
Yeah.
I'm not being like going into the real tiny little nitty-gritty stuff. That's, I love being able to construct a believable, livable world.
Yeah. So
I'll be redesigning, not even redesign is probably the wrong term, but creating a believable living space for these people.
Interesting.
That's the part I love at the job.
Nice. Cool. Yeah. Nice. Yeah. A little hint there. Yeah.
I have to say, actually, as an aside, when it got announced on being on an Aliens book, there were some Aliens fandom groups.
Yeah.
Stuff like approached me and brought me into their fold, and I've been saying like, the Aliens fandom are some of the best. I haven't seen one bad one yet.
Oh, nice.
Oh, nice.
Cool. Yeah, that's good to know, actually. It's good to know they're out there.
Yeah.
There's a lot of nutters out there, aren't there, Rob?
Yeah.
Let's face it.
Yeah. I'm one of them. they're all, everyone I've seen, it's just the Alien fandom is just, there seems to be nothing but a genuine appreciation for it. I haven't seen any of them yet hitting up a writer on Twitter, send them death threats, you know. Look, here's a new alien keychain I found. Oh, this is it's inspiring. It's really nice to see in this day and age.
So what's the plans beyond that? They're going to let you work in that universe a bit more, or are you having a little sniff about? I mean, it's Dark Horse. Presumably you'd love to work on like a Hellboy book or something like that, would you? Or what would be?
I wasn't a huge Hellboy fan until recently, because I've gotten Hellboy from the start up to, I've just finished Hellboy in Hell.
Oh, wow. Oh, you've read a shitload then. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll love this place in about 2 weeks. I'd love to get my hands on some
BPRD or something like that, you know. There's a lot there.
Plague of Frogs.
Yep.
I have that there to read.
That's incredible, dude. Yeah, so good. And Duncan Fegredo's a beast, isn't he?
Oh, it's just great.
Yeah,
Big fan of his work.
But yeah, no, Dark Horse have some titles I would very happily jump on. There are a few other books I'd like to get on too.
Yeah. Obviously, from Cruel Sunset, we want as much of your original stuff as we can possibly get. But we're all massive nerds and fans here of franchises and stuff. I mean, what is your kind of bucket list in terms of, you know, titles or franchises or just characters that you'd like to work on one day in any sort of shape or form, whether it be a cover or a comic or whatever?
I need to do an X-Men book. Even just once. The X-Men cartoon, for the theme tune still brings a tear to my eyes.
Are we talking? Oh yeah, it's amazing. Are we talking an actual X-Men book or like something like Generation X or something like that?
I would love to do an Age of Apocalypse one off.
Oh, okay.
Ooh. Yeah, that'd be great.
Like
yeah.
just a what if or a, you know, just a, like just.
So who would be your core members? Who would you use as who would be team members?
Oh, Psylocke, Archangel, right. Purple Archangel with the metal wings.
Yeah.
Banshee, Marrow, yes. Blink.
Banshee. Yeah.
You throw Marrow in there as well, no?
Oh, I love Marrow.
Yeah.
Marrow's the woman. Is Marrow? I always get confused.
Yeah,
it
had like the sort of.
You did. There's Marrow and Maggot came out at the same. Well,
yeah.
So did Marrow used to be a prostitute? Is that the one?
No,
wasn't she one of the Morlocks? Was she a Morlock? Yeah.
But wasn't she in a mutant brothel at one point? I got a feeling she might have been.
You just want to think that about anyone.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think about you like that, actually. Yeah.
ACP Origins.
Yeah.
Yeah. Vince was once in a mutant brothel. Yeah, that's it. Easy.
Oh, God.
Yeah, okay. You'll get Banshee in there, my friend. Banshee's a great character. People forget how good Banshee is.
Yeah.
Is he dead at the moment in the comics?
I can't remember. Christ almighty, I read it all the time.
I mean, it could be dead this week, and by the time this comes out, it'll be alive again.
Yeah.
Who's the best Banshee artist, then, would you say? Rob?
Probably Joe Madd.
Right, okay.
Yeah, or Humberto Ramos.
Oh, see, I would have said, I'm going to murder his name, Chris Bocello for Generation X. I thought he was.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He was very good.
I would have said Byrne. Byrne gave him some big old sideburns, and he always had a he always had a pipe on the go. He was like proper old man Banshee. I like that.
There are times when his representation as an Irishman has been, you know, you know, when he's hanging out with Tom, was it Black Tom and his shillelagh?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a little bit on the nose, wasn't it? Yeah. I was liking
Declan Shelby on a few occasions has thrown up like a redesign of Banshee and stuff, and it's always looked amazing.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Okay.
I used to like the way Claremont would have them driving from London to Edinburgh in half an hour or something like that. It was all that sort of thing.
It's a little jaunt. Yeah.
I'd
love to see you on an X-Men book, dude. That'd be
great.
I've been writing for years, and this is probably my ultimate dream job. I've been writing a treatment for a pitch for a Centurion's book.
Oh my god!
Is that your sex noise?
Yeah, I've just done it now. Power extreme. Whoa.
Oh man!
This needs to happen, dude. This needs to happen.
Because I want to do like a Game of Thrones. A fire, old man Logan version of Centurion.
Oh my god, are you going to do the gritty reboot of Centurions? Oh my god.
Set 20 years after sort of the last, when it lost.
Yeah, kind of like the after the fall of Doc Terror and stuff. And
yeah.
Like, make the, in the continuity of what I would set, like, the cartoon is real. Not real, but it's like a propaganda used. Yeah. For the thing, like they're real people, but they're obviously not called Ace McLeod and Jake Rockwell or whatever. And I'd just make it gritty and more grounded, but also fun.
Great. Where do franchises like that sit in the sort of world of comics? You know, things like Centurions, Visionaries, and all of this. Is it just the toy companies have the license and they just don't have comics made of them? I mean, like.
Yeah, I don't know. We had the problem with Micronauts, didn't we, for ages?
Yeah.
That's the problem with that, wasn't it?
You have to approach the company and say, like, I want to use this license for making comics. You've got to pay X amount of money to do that.
Because sometimes I see indie books just, you know, you'll scroll through Comixology and then you'll be like, hang on, Is that a GoBots series, which is out, just came out this week?
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, it has, yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm thinking, how did this happen? You know, how has these indie creators got hold of this license?
Well, fans are clamoring for a GoBots comic.
Yeah. Well, I don't think there was much of a queue.
No.
Yeah. I actually think it's generally someone gets to know someone who says, oh, go on. You know, I think it's more like that.
Yeah, at some convention, they're at the bar at night, like, oh, yeah, my mate Dave has the things for GoBots. Oh, I like watch that. Here, and it's two tequilas later, they've pitched the series.
Yeah.
You sort of wake up in the morning, look at the bedstand, and there's a contract to fulfill like 24 issues of GoBots. Like, what the fuck?
Fucking Penelope Pitstop. What's happened to my life?
Yeah, I was always a fan of GoBots, so I'm looking forward to that coming.
Yeah. Yeah, that's James. Is it James Scioli? Is that his name? You know that artist?
Scioli. Oh, right. Scioli, is it? Yeah. He's fucking mental, though, isn't he?
That's why I think his GoBots series is going to be worth a look, because it looks...
What else has he worked on?
He did G.I. Joe versus...
Was it Transformers?
I think it was Transformers versus G.I. Joe, wasn't it? I think he did a bit of that, didn't he?
Yeah.
He's a crazy person, I think, which is good. I kind of like that.
I think that GoBots is out. Go on.
GoBots is out, yeah. GoBots came out last week on Comixology.
All right.
I have to check that out.
Yeah. The cover does nothing for it. It's just like a close-up of a robot's face. You know, whereas I think they should have gone all out, kind of like, so that people look at it and go, "The GoBots? What the hell is this?"
Yeah.
It's a bit ambiguous, because it's just that Leader One character. He's sort of the Optimus Prime, isn't he, of the GoBots? Yeah. He's sort of headshot looking up, and it's kind of, this is an odd take if you kind of, the first issue.
For a first issue, you kind of want to grab people straight away, don't you?
Yeah,
I mean, GoBots were the poor man's Transformer, weren't they? They were complete cheaply made figures, but there are those people that love them. I remember them. I totally remember them. I had a few.
Yeah, I had a few.
Yeah,
I think they were out before Transformers.
Isn't that what?
If you were, it's one of those episodes of the toys. You know,
the toys that made us. Yeah.
I was more into the Rock Lords. Do you remember the
GoBots? Oh yeah.
Fucking Transformer to rocks.
It's the best thing to transform into, isn't it?
Yeah.
Fucking rock.
Yeah, literally they were like a 4-part Rubik's Cube.
Might be useful, that's all I'm going to say.
Years ago, one of my mates, when he was still living at home with his parents, this is all like late teens, he had a massive great big house, and on the top level upstairs around, like, he used to have a shelf, and he had all these old like Transformers and GoBot toys there, and he had like about five or six of the Rock Lords, and I was like, where the fuck do you get these? They're awful. They're like little plastic rocks.
Oh, I'll tell you what Scioli's done as well. He did Godland. Do you remember Godland? It's like a Kirby homage.
Oh, I heard of that one. Yeah,
okay.
Really good. Yeah, and he did American Barbarian before that, which is just off the chain nuts.
Yeah,
really good.
Yeah, he's not an indie darling, but he's definitely an indie name, isn't he? He's proper.
Yeah, in America. He did giant size Kung Fu Bible stories. I've not read that one.
That's fucking great. What a great title.
I'm pressing buy on Comixology as we speak.
Yeah. It's hard to think of any story in the Bible which couldn't be improved with Kung Fu.
Yeah.
Yeah. I make you right on that.
Yeah.
Oh my god. But speaking of Kung Fu, Rob, I'd love to see you do some martial arts scenes. I mean, you must love Kung Fu.
Your affinity for action.
I mean, who doesn't like Ip Man? It's amazing.
Ip Man 1 is just such a fucking amazing film. Great. People need to pay attention.
Versus the 10 guys over that bag of rice. I watch it every couple of weeks. Oh.
It goes downhill a little bit by Ip Man 3. I'm going to say that.
Ip Man 3, is that where the bandits waltz into the city at the start and start beating everyone up?
That's right, I think so.
Yeah, the start of that's amazing.
Well, what's the one with Mike Tyson?
I think that might be three. Ip Man 4 has got friend of the show, Scott Adkins, in it. Where they, Yeah, he's in it. Yeah,
that guy should be in every movie.
Agreed. Have you seen Accident Man yet?
No, it's good.
Fucking crazy good. Yeah. We had him on the show talking about it. He was a really nice guy as well. Really, really good. Stayed chatting to us for ages afterwards. Yeah, top bloke. But I think Hitman comes to America. I think it's the story about him coming to America. I think that's how it works. Which sounds quite interesting, actually. I'm really looking forward to seeing that. Yeah. Cool. I think it's wrapped now. Yeah.
Have you ever seen the movie Drive? With Mark
yes.
Oh, the Mark Dacascos one.
Yes.
Oh,
yes. That's he's amazing. He's absolutely
really good.
So underappreciated.
And now he's just known for that Iron Chef, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, he's just shouting out the ingredients.
I think that Crime Freeman film was going to be like his kind of calling card, like, look, this is the big film, this guy's a something, and it never really took off.
I mean, surely you mean Double Dragon.
Oh, Lord.
But if you listen to stuff like Kung Fu Movie Guide and all those sort of things, they say Drive is like what is one of the top 10 movies.
It's so good.
Martial arts action.
I've not seen it in years.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, really good.
The choreography in it and the cinematography, it's just it shot so well. Same with The Matrix as well, as just as a martial arts movie. I mean, whatever else bullshit's layered on top of it, the fights in there are incredible.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
The good old the choreographer, the Yung Wu Ping. I think he'd done the first Ip Man, and if you track down his films, he'd done The Matrix as well. The cinematography and kind of choreography and like the films he's done. There's another one with Donnie Yen called Iron Monkey.
That's
fantastic.
Yeah, I mean 36 Chamber of Shaolin, all that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's great.
What's that, mate?
Is Iron Monkey the one where they're fighting on poles and everything?
That's the one, right at the end. There's that fucking crazy monk dude who's kind of fighting with him. Yeah, it's a great film.
I mean, I'm not a huge fan of everything Jackie Chan does, because I think some of it he does for a fucking few quid, doesn't he? But is it Meals on Wheels? Is that the name of the movie where he fights the guy from Grosse Pointe Bank?
Benny the Jet Ikides.
Benny the Jet, yeah, yeah. That's
is that the one where his
fight.
his brother's got glasses or something like that? And
Yim Bu.
Yeah, that's it. I can't remember the name of him, but I remember seeing that when Channel 4 used to play like martial arts films late at night on Friday nights. Yeah,
God, that was the sweet spot for me. Armor of God and
Armor
Project
of God.
A and,
oh, yeah. So good.
Yeah, yeah, and even Battle Creek Brawl or The Big Brawl, I think it's got two names. That's an amazing film. Yeah. But that was by Robert Klaus? Is he the director of End of the Dragon? I think he did that one as well, didn't he? Yeah, that's actually pretty good.
One of my favorite Jackie Chan's is Dragon Forever. Dragons Forever, when it's got Sammo Hung in Yung Bu. That's so good. That's so good. Yeah, worth checking that one out.
Okay. Is it Fist of Fury 2 he does? I can't remember which one he does. He does a sequel, doesn't he?
Fist of Fury? Jet Li.
Fist of Fury is the Bruce Lee one, but I think Jackie Chan in his early days did, around about the time of he did Drunken Master and all that sort of thing. I think it's that out of the top of my head, but there you go. Kung Fu hole.
Jackie Chan's in Fist of Fury. He was part of the stunt team.
I watched him get a kick in Into the Dragon last night.
Yeah.
You know that bit where in that. Yeah.
The end of the film where Bruce kicks the main bad guy out of the like through the paper wall and smash it. That's Jackie Chan.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Taking a massive jump and injure himself.
He gets a kicking in the basement, doesn't he? In the opium basement in Enter the Dragon. He sort of gets grabbed by the hair. Yeah.
So at the start of his career, he was just being beaten up by Bruce Lee all the time.
Yeah. He's one of the dudes that Bruce's sister beats up as well in that, you know, when she's on the run from the
rape
game. Oh,
is he? I didn't realise that. Okay, the rape bit.
Yeah.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah. On that cheery note. Yeah.
O'Hara.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good. So long story short, we want to see Rob doing a kung fu.
I mean, like
a hard target comic. Oh, God.
Here's a question for you. Who's in Hard Target 2? We've asked this before.
Aikens is in it, but I haven't.
Yes. Yeah, it's all right. He falls on an elephant. I like that bit.
But does he punch a snake in the face?
Don't think so. Yeah. But you've already drawn Batman already, haven't you? So was that just cover work? Was it for Dynamite?
It was just the cover, and it was a very out of the blue offer. I was like, of course I'm gonna draw that.
So that was because there was two sides to that. It was Batman Shadow and Shadow. Shadow Batman, wasn't there? I think there was two series. Yeah, yeah. So
I did it on Shadow Batman. I don't know. One of them.
They're great series. They're really good. Giovanni Timpano does the art and it's outstanding.
That dude's a superstar. His standards, his work is
Amazing. Yeah, I met him in New York. I'm absolutely big fan of his stuff. Like, love it. He draws a great shadow and a great Batman. Yeah, really good. Yeah.
His storytelling as well is amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you know much of the Shadow? Had you read much of the Shadow before that?
No, all I knew was, I was aware of the character, and I had seen the Alec Baldwin movie. I was aware of Batman, so I was halfway there.
There you go. Yeah. There's a little bit of a crossover in the origins somewhere. I think Batman had two guns for a while, didn't he? A bit like the Shadow.
The thing is, cool. When it comes to stuff like that, I love discovering character. You know, if you're given, could you draw this? And then I love like reading up on it. If it's something I don't know, you sort of end up liking those characters more than some of the other stuff that you normally like. Do you know what I mean? When you find out about it, I think everyone has to take a certain ownership over everything that they draw or they write.
Yeah.
And certainly when, like, I always like the characters that aren't the mainstream ones. They're the C and D list. Because they feel more like they're mine. You know what I mean? Because no one.
Yeah, everyone's done Captain America. Everyone's going to give you a kick in for drawing Daredevil wrong, aren't they?
Yeah.
But if you can draw someone else. Whereas then, you make it your own a bit.
Yeah, well, I just love to do a Taskmaster series or something like that. Do you know what I mean?
I remember a couple of years ago, I had a chat with CB Sobolski. He was doing portfolio reviews. And he was saying, like, me and my friend had done, like, random samples of whatever this X-Men script, or I can't even remember, or maybe an Avengers thing, but it's like, if you're going to do your own take on a thing, make it of a character that obviously isn't in mainstream thing at the minute, and do something of someone who's a little bit more unique so you stand out more. And those characters definitely are more appealing. And now being given an opportunity to work on one of them books of a more, like, a lower tier character. Like, I would like with Batman and stuff, and I'd love to work on that, like Grifter.
I could really, from having spoken to you now, Rob, I can really see your sweet spot for comics. Is, I'm going to say, like, early 90s kind of period, is it? Or
I just like good comics.
Okay, that's fine.
With Comixology now, I've only quite new to digital comics, and I've been reading so many at the minute, just because, you know, I can take the pad in when I'm pooping, and then I can read them then at night. I don't have to turn the light on, not disturbing the missus. The pad is lighting it up, and that guided view, love it.
I'm really liking it, I've got to tell you, I'm a convert as well. And I'll tell you what, you can read comics, but if you watch porn, it always wakes the missus up, doesn't it? Yeah. That's the thing. The noise.
Headphones, Tony, headphones.
Oh, yeah, headphones, sorry.
Yeah. Those beats you're wearing.
Beats by Dre while he's listening to, I don't know, beats by someone else. Anyway.
Porn,
recommend. The 90s comics, there's some phenomenal comics, really. There's good and there's shite. Same with, like, even then, comics, there's shite comics. But movies, there's great movies, there's shite movies. Personal taste. I mean, I won't tell anybody what is a good comic or not. Yeah. I just know.
We will.
For me, well, I have to be quite diplomatic. And I don't want to work on mobile. As I said, I'm an art snob first when it comes to it, and if there's a good story tacked on top of that, then I'm just a happy camper. Comics now, like, there are some incredible comics now.
There really are.
And from some artists now that I just, like, I can't believe how good they are. That dude that did, like, Luther Strode, and then
Tradmore, one of my favourites.
Yeah, Tradmore. He's great. Oh, God, like, how is that human? Like,
I know.
Even like guys like James Harren.
Amazing. Yeah.
Like, even Sarah Pacelli. Like, they're amazing.
Well, there's real quality out there, and it's spread across. You know, it's easy to say, oh, it's the big two, but it's not. It's spread all over the place now. You know, yeah. indie comics to, you know, self-published to, you know, the art house comics. There's good everywhere now, I think, you know.
Yeah.
But that, like, I mean, when I, when 90s is when I got into comics. And it grew down. And for me, when I first got in, it was, like, I started properly collecting comics. It was like Joe Madden, Uncanny X-Men, and it was like Carlos Pascio on X-Men and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then into Ultimates a couple of years later. But now, well, like, when it was, even back then, it was like, are you Marvel or you DC? And I was like, I'm Marvel. I'm not. Because it was X-Men, just 100%
yeah.
X-Men.
Yeah.
But now it's like I'm picking up comics from everybody.
Yeah.
And
yeah, because
I'm a, as I said, like, snobby. Like, I'm only buying comics I want to read and stuff that looks good. So I'm like, I'm hitting 100%. I'm batting 100% on stuff I'm reading because I enjoy it all.
Well, I'll tell you one thing for certain, all you listeners out there that haven't checked out Rob's work, if you go to his Twitter and check out Cruel Sunset, you will you'll immediately be signed on to whatever this man's doing. And and just next month, well, only about a month and a bit away, 2 months or whatever, he's doing an Alien series. So what more can you say?
See? Yeah, how long is that running for?
January 23rd.
Oh, right, yeah. Cool. Is it, was it 6 issues, is it, or?
4 issues.
Four.
Lovely.
Nice.
Nice cool. length. Nice length of a limited series, 4 issues, isn't it?
That's enough to tease.
It's enough to give you restless nights.
And it's the first issue is up for pre-order on Comixology at the moment as well, I noticed.
Yes.
Today.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yes. So, so we'll give you the link in the show notes, and obviously Rob's going to tell you where you can follow him at the end of the show. But thank you for talking to us about all your work, Rob. I thought it was fascinating.
Yeah, really good, mate. Yeah, amazing. Yeah, really interesting. Yeah.
Amazing.
Thanks for having me.
Pleasure.
Well, don't go anywhere. Yes, he's going to stay with us for a little bit. We've got a few comic book recommendations to give you lovely people. But before that, do we have any shout-outs, gentlemen?
Yeah, I've got a couple. If you're on the Facebook group, a lot of you listeners are, there's an art swap thing going on there for Christmas. Mr. Mura, B.E. Mura, has organised it. So there's quite a few names on it already. You guys are on it as well, aren't you?
Hell yeah. I didn't do it last year.
Didn't you? Oh, yeah. It's a lot of people signing up. Some really good stuff. And some real professional people on there as well. I think there's a few people on there you think, oh, if I get something from that, I'll be doing well.
But
I honestly put myself up for it. Then I realised that, I can't draw. So I've taken myself off. And I'm now the booby prize. So if somebody might get an extra drawing of, or maybe I'll just draw around something as usual.
Oh,
so
what? A3 piece of paper.
What's A50? Is that really small? Also, it's the last week of our Kickstarter, How to Make Comics with Springworth. So please go over. We've gone through our target now, but we've got some great. The next stretch goal is a print from the mighty Mr. Prolix. So go and have a look at that. And there's a sketchbook coming from the mighty Mr. Hanks, which is amazing. Now, wait till you see that sketchbook. Nick's print is beautiful as well. So go and pledge. There's only a week left. Yeah. Do yourself a favour. It's for a good charity. It's for kids in hospital. So go and have a look at it. There you go.
Yeah.
They're my two.
Awesome. Well, I've got a couple of events.
Yes. Oh, yes.
The weekend of December the 8th and the 9th are going to be great for comic fans. Because on December the 8th, in my yard, in Bath, there is the BAM Comic Art and Zine Fair taking place in the centre of town in Comedia in Bath, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. It is free entry. A lot of local artists and a couple of extra faces are going to be there. Myself, I've gotten together with a bunch of great fantastic illustrators. Rachel Lee Carter, Lise Richardson, Sam Schaefer, Andrew Richmond, Rebecca Bagley. That's the sort of local sort of community. The little group, the mafia, that we've created. And Rachel went ahead and sorted organizing a little event, which was sort of last minute, but it's going to be great. I cannot wait for it.
Yeah, I think it's going to be good. I like the fact there's a lack of pressure because it's kind of last minute on the run up to Christmas, but I'm driving down for it. Yeah. I can't wait for it.
If you can make it, please do. It's the last weekend of the Bath Christmas markets, which, you know, if you're shopping, it's hell on earth. Because it's super busy, so just bear that in mind. Whether you're coming as a creator or plan.
You ready?
Because it's quite busy. So, but hopefully that mean that lots of people from the street will come in and check out some cool comics and prints and illustration and stuff.
You had the prerequisite email from that geezer from Primeval wanting to turn up.
Is he coming along?
Yeah. No, yeah. But we will have the toilet from Jurassic Park. Yeah. Jesus Christ.
Oh, good.
Yeah, that geezer will turn up for a half a sausage roll.
So will I, Dan. You know me.
That's true.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's a Facebook sort of page for it at the moment. So BAM Comic Art and Zine Fair in Bath, December the 8th. And on December the 9th, there is the Catford Comic and Zine Fair, which is taking place in Blythe Hill Tavern, 12 till 5. Now, this is also free entry. And the likes of Douglas Noble, Joe Stone, Lucy Sullivan, Centrala, Broken Frontier, and our pal, Gareth Hopkins.
Mr. Hopkins is going to be there, yeah. With his new book. Comic, which is brilliant. Yeah. I really like that. Yeah.
So don't miss that. You can follow them on Twitter at CCZF2018. And where if you're in London, it is London, isn't it? Yeah, of course it is.
Yeah, it is, yeah. South East London.
Yeah, so, and the postcode's SE231JB. So, yeah, so two amazing comic events. So,
oh, can I just give a quick another comic event? So the 2nd of December is the December Comic Mart. Royal National Hotel, Russell Square, 12 till 7.
Nice.
I actually think it's 12 till 5. I think that might be the social afterwards. So yeah, I'm going to go to that because Comic Mart before Christmas sounds good to me. So.
We'll have to do another one in the new year.
Yeah, we'll do, yeah. Yeah, we'll have to get together. Yeah, it's a top day. Yeah.
So, Dan, do you have any shout-outs?
No.
There you go, classic. So we obviously are going to give you lovely people something to check out for the future week, month, or whenever you're listening to this. So it's that time of the show where it's the recommendations. So who wants to go first?
Guess first.
There's two things, actually. One is that IDW's Transformers Last Light is ending now.
Oh,
right, okay, yep. Yeah, yep.
That run from, was it More Than Meets the Eye, into then Last Light, is one of the best comics I've ever read.
Oh, right. Okay.
I still haven't read the last couple of issues because I don't want to, because that means it's over. But if you get a chance, read it. It's just so well written. It's funny. It's horrific. It's the best interpretation I've seen of some of the Transformers, like, ever.
Amazing. So
check that out if you can. There's a crowd called Rogue Comics, if you've heard of them.
Okay.
An Irish indie group. They set up, they used to be part of Lightning Strike that we set up. They had helped us with the anthology and stuff, and they've now set up their own group called Rogue Comics, and they are producing some amazing books. But they have one that recently knocked the book out of a Kickstarter campaign for Neon Skies.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I've heard of it. Yeah.
It's a really cool looking cyberpunk book. It's done by Kevin Keane and written by Ciaran MacAntonio. And it is very specific to Dublin, but they're having an actual book launch on the 20th of December, Forbidden Planet.
Oh.
But if you want to check it out online...
You've got a few listeners out there, dude. Yeah.
It's a very well-produced book, very polished, great story, and they're both... all the creators involved are great. Rogue Comics Ireland are awesome.
Brilliant. I have to say, Lightning Strike got a. I think they must have paid for an advert on Word Balloon this week, as I heard them mention this week. There was sponsored by Lightning Strike Comics. Yeah,
really?
I won't put them past them. I know. I was Owen McCauley set up Lightning Strike Comics years ago.
Oh, really?
It was a creative outlet, so we could get people who wanted to make comics, they could do short stories, and we'd get them published and stuff. But I left Lightning Strike a couple of years ago. I still work with them on occasion, but it's Owen McCauley's the driving force behind it.
Okay.
They're owning everything. They are doing such a good job. They've got the license for the Phantom.
They got Alex Saviak's drawing it, isn't he? I think they got Alex Saviak on it.
I got to go to dinner with him in New York Comic Con, and he's a fucking hero. The guy's a
great, yeah.
So good, and his art's amazing, and he's such a good guy.
I got a sketch of him at London Super Comic Con 2 ago, and he was such a sweet guy. I got to tell you, I could have chatted to him all day, and all the time I'm looking over at a mate going, I'm chatting to Alex Saviak. This is amazing, you know, but he was like really personable, you know.
Oh man, like, as I said, like, I love the process behind art and talking to artists about how they put it. And so talking with him was like a dream. And he's going to a Dublin Comic Con in August, I think, or
March. Okay.
And I the guys were ringing, I was like, make sure I get to have a chat with him again. We'll go for dinner. Guy's a legend.
Yeah, he's great.
But yeah, and that Lightning Strike producers, like, they have a new book coming out. They've got Ron Mars doing some stuff with them now.
Okay.
Like, they're far cry from working in the basement of a comic book shop.
Yeah. Awesome stuff. God, that's plenty for the show notes.
Yeah.
Who wants to go next? Tony, do you want to go?
So I go next, okay. So I had an email from, or a message from our crack dealer, or as we like to refer to, Arena, from Europe Comics. She was quite excited because they're putting a book out, I think, December, that has just won the René Goscinny Prize at Angoulême. The book's called East West, and it's written by Pierre Christin, who we've spoken about on the show a couple of times, because he's the writer of Valerian. So this book is, do you remember, I think we talked a little, quite a lot about it, didn't we? When we were talking about the Valerian series from, I think it was the Cine Book episode, wasn't it?
Yeah.
He's a really important creator. And I think, you know, it's certainly in France and Belgium. It's illustrated by Philip Amond. And it comes out, as I say, next month. And he's won this award, which is a big deal. And it's unusual that we get books so quickly, but Europe Comics has sort of jumped on this. And it's something different. I put a couple of images out on Twitter this week, and I basically said, look, I wish that all comics were this good, because it is just phenomenally drawn, and it's really sort of poignant. And it's a travelogue. It's kind of it reminds me a bit of a sort of Frenchman's version of Cat Chapman's book, actually. You know, it's almost like a diary of travel, but over a bigger period of time. He describes it as a road movie kind of book, and I make him right on that. And it opens in sort of 1966 on a Greyhound bus traveling across post-war America. And Pierre Christin, he talks all the way through it about where he is. But it's like a travelogue, and it's like a history of the places he goes to. But it's done in a way that is very personable and personal to him. So he goes, for example, the bus stops at one point, and he thinks, look, I need to get a drink. All they have in America are these sort of sugary drinks coming out of machines. And he finds a record shop, and the French being, you know, big jazz fans, he tries to find the jazz section. And he finds it in what's referred to as the race record section in the music shop. And little moments of this that are really interesting. And he talks a bit about the oncoming sexual revolution. He ends up teaching at a university in one of the southern states of America. And he immerses himself into the sort of community and keeps buying cars, keeps being ripped off for cars, and they break down. And he discovers himself in sort of different places. And while there, he discovers sort of jazz music from America and secondhand car salesmen and Mormons and polygamy and all this sort of thing. It's really interesting. It follows his life, and the history swirls around his personal moments. And he's, as a kid, he always dreamed of being a cowboy, and he gets to do that. And it pulls him from these sort of private moments, but into these sort of amazing sort of landscapes that he's traveling through. It talks about, but it's got that preoccupation always in the background, is the preoccupation with the fact that he's also making comics. So the first Valerian came out, it's amazing when you think it's this old, but it came out in 1967. Incredible, isn't it, really? Wow. And he says, I ended up as a comics writer without really knowing. And he meets Tardy, and he meets, he just goes on and on and on about the people he meets but the scope of the story. And so it takes you behind the Iron Curtain, and he sort of scams his way behind the Iron Curtain. And he becomes like a comics drug dealer there, because they can't really get comics behind the Iron Curtain. And he's sort of handing over comics to the fans over there. And you see the politics of the time, and the Cold War, and the shortages, and the food, and the needy, and the sort of the hungry. There's a really beautiful moment where they discover a gypsy, what he refers to as a gypsy encampment, full of music and dance. And so he describes it as a gypsy Romany encampment. And it's really, really amazing, because what he does, he brushes up the modern world and the sort of the hardships of the Iron Curtain with this sort of almost like out of time kind of place. Really, really clever. He refers to it as brushing against the ancient world, which I thought was a lovely little phrase, and how they were losing it. the art and the colour switches up depending on where and what and when and all this sort of thing. So you get stuff like, you get black and white scenes when he's looking back on his childhood. You get the sepia of historical scenes. You get faux sketches and period specific art, huge panoramic views, close personal scenes.
Lovely sort of watercolour like look to it, isn't there?
Beautiful yeah, stuff. I sent it to you earlier. You're just looking at it now, mate. Yeah, just amazing stuff. Yeah, and his travels are really interesting. So, particularly interesting to me because I've just come back from East Berlin and I've been to the No Man's Land and I had a look at Checkpoint Charlie and the Jewish Memorial and all this sort of thing. And it's really interesting that part of it. They basically go through Checkpoint Charlie in this sort of really barren part of East Berlin, and as they're driving through it, they're saying to each other, "We're almost there. We're almost there," and suddenly they're then in the West, the world as it is, as the West, and all the money and food and people, big throngs of people, and it really interesting. So he has encounters with Bilal, Moebius, René Goscinny, Jean-Claude Mézières, who drew Valerian, Jack Tardy, who drew a lot of stuff, but Adele Blanc-Sec and some war books and stuff like that. And it's all about the sort of the customs and the comics and the politics and the comics and the community and the comics. And it sort of bounces backwards and forwards like that. Do you know what I mean? But it also includes a sort of breadth of all the fucking human life that's going on. Certain bits of it are quite tense. You worry for him. You think, how's he going to get out of this? And it's moments of it, a real sort of close up of the Cold War. Really, really, really interesting stuff. It's an intelligent book, though. It deals a lot with capitalism and Marxism theory and sort of socialism and dialectic materialism and stuff like this, and the way that different communities interact with each other financially and personally. Really good. And basically through the eyes of a comic writer who basically said, I didn't really want to write, in the prologue he says, I didn't really want to write an autobiography. I just kind of fell into doing this. And he does it in a different way. It's not like about, you read an autobiography by some people and they just spend the whole time telling you how great they are. This is not what that's about. It's just genuinely just breathtaking. Like, I wish all comics were this good. You can look at a page of that. A page of that is a page of art on a wall in a museum almost, in an art gallery. It's just really interesting stuff. Go to europecomics.com. They'll say this is out next month. Probably the best thing I've seen from them. Yeah, really interesting. And that's saying something with these people. Yeah. Thanks to Arena for sending it through. So, that's my one. There you go, guys.
Nice.
Nice one.
Damn, what have you got this week?
True. I've got another one from Europe Comics.
Oh, nice one, man. Through, yeah. Hey. Yeah.
It's The Regiment, The True Story of the SAS.
I haven't read this yet. Yeah, yeah.
Script by Vincent Brujas, is it? And art by Thomas Legrain. It's 1941. Almost all of Europe is under the Nazis' heel. Great Britain continues to hold out, but the situation worsens with every passing day. And in North Africa, gateway to the Middle East and its immense oil reserves, Rommel now threatens Egypt, keystone of the British defences. In these desperate times, three men, David Sterling, Blair Main, and Jock Lewis, three unconventional officers, band together to create a small elite fighting unit that will become the legend, the SAS.
Right.
It's an interesting title. It's very straight retelling of kind of the history of how these guys came together and started forming the SAS. The length and detail to which the author and the artist have gone to kind of recreate what's happened, it seems very, very accurate. And in the back of the book, there's pages and pages of research and notes, photos. They've really gone to town on it. It's interesting. It reads like it's real as well, because you think if he's reading a fictional story, stuff wouldn't play out like that. It's like kind of there's oddities in it, and you think, well, that can only really happen in real life, because it's such a bizarre way for things to play out. But very interesting. If you kind of like your history, I think you might get a kick out of this one.
Yeah.
And the art is just absolutely on point.
The cover was almost one of my picks when I did my cover.
Yeah, it's a great cover, that. Yeah. The casual sort of wartime stance of the two men on the cover is beautiful.
And
Europe
really, Comics
really nice,
are also having a massive sale on Comixology as well. So a lot of their stuff's like $1.99. So...
Yeah.
You need
in this one, it's volume one. So I presume there's going to be subsequent volumes to follow, because they only touch on a small bit of what they do. And by the end of the first book, you don't actually hear the words SAS. It's not even that their little group hasn't even come to be known as that yet.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, interesting stuff.
Nice.
All right. It's amazing that we're the country that has Hereford. And has this regiment, but it's realised by a French Belgian company.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, we did have the, Who Dares Wins film, which is the definitive take on the SAS.
Lewis Collins.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I quite like that film.
Yeah. Classic from my childhood. Right, okay. My pick for this week is it's not about history. It's not about travel. It's about metal. Yes. Nice. I'm talking
about...
You
like a bit of metal, don't you?
I fucking love metal. I'm a metalhead. And I'm also a huge fan of Daniel Warren Johnson.
We all are. Of course we are.
Yeah, one of the nicest people in comics. I know you can say that about a lot of people, but I think he genuinely is.
Yeah, I think so.
And he's obviously doing lots of great work, but his series for Image, Murder Falcon, is phenomenal.
I've downloaded this. I've bought this on Comixology, but I haven't read it yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to it.
Yes. Basically, the creators are Daniel Warren Johnson is the creator, artist, writer, and letterer. Mike Spicer is colorist on it. Russ Wooten is the letterer. I think Daniel Warren Johnson does the sort of sound effects, sort of lettering, and then Russ does all the dialogue. That's what I would have assumed. But this creative team are doing something properly special. Murder Falcon is basically the world is under attack by monsters and Jake's life is falling apart. No band, no girl, no future until he meets Murder Falcon. He was sent from the heavy to destroy all evil, but he can't do it without Jake shredding up a storm. Now, with every chord Jake plays on his guitar, the power of metal fuels Murder Falcon into all-out kung fu fury on those that seek to conquer Earth. It's time to shred.
Oh, is it a sort of personal autobiographical kind
yeah,
of thing?
I think it's yeah, the most realistic book I've read in quite some time.
Strangers in Paradise, eat your heart out.
This book is fucking awesome. Whether you like music or whatever, I think if anyone's been in a band, or actually if you just like music and who doesn't, I think Murder Falcon has something for you because it does what Daniel's work does best is he mixes. I mean, from you read that sort of synopsis and you think you're gonna get some properly over the top, maybe Adventure Time like crazy. You know the way that comes across, it's quite jokey and you know, and there's definite humour to it. But what strikes me about this comic is the heart of it, because the main character Jake, he's dealing with a lot of grief. You know, you're getting snippets of something quite sad that happened to him, which sort of made him sort of give up on music as such. And he's an awesome lead guitarist, but he just hasn't played much recently. Until monsters attack a city, and Murder Falcon turns up saying, "Jake, I need you. You need to play well, because when Jake plays well, Murder Falcon gets more powerful." It's almost like everyone has like an avatar. Like in the second issue, there's another sort of a creature that turns up for a bassist, and it's absolutely phenomenal. I don't want to spoil that at all. It's amazing when it happens. And I think over these issues, you're going to see a band come together, but each member of the band has like an avatar sort of hero type creature that will fight these monsters that are coming to Earth. There's almost a sort of Pacific Rim kind of vibe that like creatures on the other side of this realm are going to break into Earth to try and take over everything. Only there's a giant 7-foot falcon with a cyborg arm who does kung fu that will fight them, you know, as you do.
Thing you said there was bad.
It's just, I mean, you know, when I saw the cover and I just thought, oh, this is great, you know, I mean, the name, if you just, Murder Falcon's like the best name ever. I was in then, but just seeing the story itself and is just even better. There's so many layers to it. It's about people. And if you cut away all the layers, there's genuine characters and people and emotions there. And then he's just put layers and layers and layers of kung fu, velocity, kinetic action, giant monsters, and a shitload of metal. Fuck yes. I absolutely love this. You know, you will breeze through the two issues so far very, very quickly. The third issue, I think, is out December the 12th. I've already pre-ordered it on Comixology. Oh, nice. And it's, I know Daniel's, obviously, Extremity was an amazing book as well. And obviously we know like Space Mullet and stuff, and he's just going from strength to strength with all of this. But I know he is also a guitarist as well, and he's a metalhead himself. And you, you read a comic and you think this is a person who knows what they're talking about. They haven't just thought of this cool idea. Oh, someone plays a guitar and then you've got like a creature that's powered by it. It's someone that actually knows the shit they're talking about, like the chords. I get a feeling that when someone's playing the guitar, their fingers are in exactly the right place for the certain note that they're playing.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah. Good. It's amazing. Murder Falcon, please check it out. I'm going to buy the individual issues. I already know I'm going to get a trade. It's well worth it. I think the first issue is $1.49 on Comixology now. I think that with Image, I don't know how long it is before their price drops. Have you noticed this? It's like $2.50.
You can't figure out with everyone, can you?
Yeah, the new issues are $2.50, but then like a month later, it's like $1.49. So, but yeah, seriously, jump on Murder Falcon because the whole creative team are doing something special. I think that you just got to stick with. So, Does he work digitally now? I mean, I'm not sure, actually. If he's still doing original pages.
I've certainly seen original pages on his table last year in New York, but he might well be by now, yeah.
I mean, Jesus Christ, if he's doing original pages. Some of the pages in this are just, give him all the money. Give him all the money.
Yeah. his art is amazing. It's like Corey Walker on acid. It's
Yeah.
And when he goes,
But noise and everything, but also easily readable.
And when he just sort of says, I've done this like Darth Vader sketch, or here's a little commission, and you just see a little black and white that just makes you want to weep because it's not just a character. There's backgrounds, there's textures, there's...
His concepts for commissions are like the best I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Like his takes on stuff for just one-off pieces are just...
Yeah.
Oh, he's a legend.
I remember he did an Aliens one, which was Ripley standing in front of an alien queen once.
Yeah.
Which I just thought, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. I always try and get those little homage. He did a Deep Space Nine one, didn't he? And a Pacific Rim one. I always try and get them off him because you can see they're going to go up in price.
Only increase
in price on that.
Because he's doing amazing work, and obviously, like, you know, he's getting these self-published titles. I think he's done some other work. He's done some work for Marvel as well, I think. He has, hasn't he?
I think he has, mate. Yeah.
But it's nice that, like, amongst all this, he's putting out like an 8-page sort of like just self-printed little book.
Yeah, for a bit of fun.
Just because he wants to tell a story. Yeah, yeah. So there you go. Some amazing books, publishers and creators to discover this week.
Can I just give a little shout out to Kev Cooling as well?
You can indeed,
because we've just got a review through. Yay, Kev! Yay. For issue 3.
Issue three
of what?
Awesome Comics Anthology.
What's that? And where can you get it?
Where can you get it, Dan?
It's Awesome Comics Pod at BigCartel.com.
Hey, class.
I'm not going to laugh and ruin it because we were going really smoothly then.
But if you go to weaverpressstudios.co.uk, which is Kev's blog, and he's very kindly seen what it's about, read it properly and understood it. Yeah. And he's also putting some of his own artwork out there, which I know we talked a bit about recently, but I have to say, his geezer's art, I desperately want to work with him. It's looking really good.
Yeah.
Really interesting stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Top stuff.
Thanks,
Kev.
Cheers, Kev.
As always.
Yeah. Cheers, man.
Thank you very much for listening, folks. It's been another enjoyable one. Rob's been an absolute star, and he's welcome back anytime. And we hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you like or disagree with anything we talk
probably
about.
Probably do.
Well, if you disagree with it, please don't get in touch, because we've got fragile egos. We work in comics, for God's sake.
Yeah. And we'll hunt you down.
Yeah. Well, Tony will. He's like a savage. You're like the savage Wolverine, aren't you, Tony?
Yeah.
More like Old Man Logan, I guess.
Old Man Limp Logan.
Oh.
I know someone who called Sam Neill an asshole to his face, so I know people. So don't you annoy me.
Oh, God. But if you want to contact us, you can...
I nicked a bag of chips off Black Lace once. Does that count? I don't know if that...
Yeah, hell yeah.
Oh. Did they say, watch it, or I'll agger do you?
They went, excuse me, mate, they're my chips. I went, fuck off, and walked off. That was tough back then, wasn't I? Yarmouth.
Times have changed, don't they, Tony?
1984.
Yeah. Dear God. Anyway, if you want to find out more about this, you can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter @theawesomepod, where we will be talking... Well, we'll be announcing whatever. You know, it's the lead up to Christmas. Who knows?
Yeah.
We'll be full of stuffing and mince pies in no time. Dan, did you just giggle then? I've never, yeah. I have so never heard a Dan Butcher ring. Giggle. And if someone please,
you just went full Alan Partridge. I just...
Yeah, but I didn't think I'd ever get a giggle out of you like that.
There you go. It was worth it.
Yeah. Normally I only get that when I tickle you. What? Anyway, if you do the Book of Faces, go to facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. And we've mentioned it once early on the show, but you definitely need to check out the Facebook group Awesome Comics Talk if you do the Facebook, because that's just, there's no hard selling. It's just people talking about comics, whether it be process, just pages, books that they love.
What's the name of the group again? It's Awesome Comics Chat.
Awesome Comics Talk.
Awesome Comics Talk. And you got to sign up for the Secret Santa art swap by the end of Monday, the 26th, today.
I think he's changed it, hasn't he? I think it's now Wednesday.
Wednesday. Saying,
yeah, okay. It's going to be Wednesday on the ground, so some people won't listen to this straight away.
Yeah. And if you listen to it 2 weeks later, sorry.
Yeah, you missed it. No.
But we still love you. Booby prize. Yeah. Oh, God, the booby prize. So many boobies.
Yeah.
Anyway. But thank you for listening to us, whether it's on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com. if you listen to us on iTunes, subscribe, leave a review, just get the word out about the show, because the more people listen to the show, the more people that discover great creators and books like Rob and Cool Santa. There you go. And also, if you listen to us on Spotify, thank you very much. And all of the networks, Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife, what other networks are we on, Tony?
Favourite of mine, Pod, I just got skiffed.
Sometimes it's like you're not even trying.
wait till you look that up.
I'm not looking anything. Everything you say, I'm never going to look that up. You are a browser history nightmare in human form.
Use Joe's phone, it'll be fine.
She's going to see that he's looked that up. I think, what the fuck?
Yeah, she goes, comes up as an automatic one. You know, just comes up as a predictive one.
Oh, God. But anyway, where
I can't wait to see Joe. I'm seeing her in a couple of weeks. Can't wait.
What am I, chopped liver?
Yeah.
Oh. There you go, audio chopped liver indeed. But where can people find us online, etc.? Tony?
neveronanything.blogspot.co.uk or EzOhyz on Twitter. There you go.
Dan?
Yeah. I was waiting for my cue there.
I thought my fucking internet had broken everything.
Dead air. So you can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com.
Hey. Amazing, which you should. You can follow me at Jester Diablo, and you can find out more about my comic The Red Mass from Mars at theredmassfrommars.com. I completely forgot what I was going to say then. But Rob Carey, thank you very much again for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
It was top stuff, and we hope our lovely listeners. Where can people find you, etc.?
Twitter on Rob Carey Artist. And you'll find my Tumblr from there.
Nice.
So if you want to read Cruel Sunset, you've got that as a pinned tweet at the top.
Yeah. So it's a Dropbox. It's a Dropbox link, but you can read it.
Yeah. And it's there. It's free. It's the very purpley looking cover, not the Robocop ripoff at all.
It's nice.
Homage. A homage. We love a homage. I don't know why I'm saying it like that, but we love it.
Yeah, he's going full Partridge, Dan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going full Partridge.
I welcome it.
Yeah. I go full Partridge. I enjoy it. But Rob's definitely going places. So we're very pleased to have talked to him before. This time next year, he won't be talking to him. He'll be too big, won't he?
Nah. Yeah, he won't speak to
him. I'm almost there. These are lucky to get me. Maybe my assistant might answer next time.
You go full shaking. Just go full shaking. No eye contact.
No, I'm good.
And on that bombshell, thank you very much for listening, folks. From Dan, Tony, Rob and myself, have a brilliant week. Read loads of cool comics. And as always, stay awesome. See ya.
See ya.
See ya.
Bye.
I love it when the guests do a really quiet bye.
The cursing thing, good, because I tend to swear quite a lot.
Oh, awesome. Good man.
I consider it a sign of intelligence, and people who don't...
Me too.
Fuck off.
Yeah, people who don't are mostly...
Yeah. Although I will make a note now, that's the only word that I say, can we hold back on? Because I have to edit that. That's the one
that
I have to edit.
That's my favourite one.
Oh, well, yeah.
I've been saving it up all week, so my quota hasn't been reached, so it's going to be in the